We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey guys, this is Stephen Haglund, the host of the Guilty as Charged podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and supporting the show. As always, we do appreciate any ratings, reviews, likes, subscribes, comments on any podcast platform, including YouTube. And I want to start today off by giving a shout out to one of our sponsors, The Backroom Collection. You can find him Twitter at The Backroom COL2. Again, that's The Backroom COL2. He has been putting out some fire Chargers prints, and I think any football fan should check him out and be able to upgrade their man cave, their workout, you know, situation, their home office, their actual office. Check him out online, thebackroomcollection.net. If you use the code GAC, that's G-A-C, on your first purchase, you get 10% off. He is even going to be able to attend a Justin Herbert signing. He's got a bunch of Justin Herbert prints that he will have signed by the man himself. Again, use the code GAC for 10% off at thebackroomcollection.net. Thank you so much for supporting him and our show. That being said, let's get to it. Hello, everyone. Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast. Alex is unavailable today, so it's just me and Tyler, who was almost unavailable today. Bit of a crazy evening for us, doing the show on Tuesday as opposed to Thursday, but happy to be here with Tyler. Tyler, how you doing, man?
Doing well, just scrambling a little bit because of all the experiments I had to do and, you know, because the holidays were shifting things, but we showed up, I showed up, we are awake, so that's half the battle.
We are awake. That is half the battle. So really excited about this upcoming game. I'm going to be in Utah watching it with my family. So it's going to be a bit of a change. You know, I mentioned none of them are Chargers fans, so they'll get to experience hopefully a calm Chargers game. Hopefully they won't experience a crazy Chargers game. Yeah, but that really excited for that one. So show's going to be a little bit different, obviously. Because, you know, we don't have any injury updates or anything. all we have right now, essentially on the injury front, is that Linval Joseph is on the COVID list, unfortunately tested positive. He is confirmed to be unvaccinated, so he will miss this Sunday's game, potentially more, depending on how that goes. Jerry Tillery apparently is asymptomatic, according to Brandon Staley's press conference from yesterday. So it looks like he is going to play. And then Christian Covington was deemed as day-to-day. So that one seems a little bit iffy. So the young guns, Joe Gaziano and Braden Fajoco, are going to have another week, it looks like, and potentially Forrest Merrill as well, depending on Christian Covington's status.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I want some guys to play and I want them to show what they have, I also want to see these young guys. I want to know if they look... Can they repeat this performance? I always, when I coach, I always tell my students, you can get a skill once, and maybe that's just lucky. But if you do it twice, then you really have it. And so I want to see this interior group repeat. These guys took a lot of pride in stopping the run. It looked like they were just, I mean, I don't remember a time this season where I thought that the Chargers could stop a running back at the goal line. But they did it consistently, and there were multiple guys. And one particular play I highlighted on Twitter, it was Fajoco, it was Bosa, it was Jones, it was Gaziano, it was Nwosu. Everyone stood their ground. Everyone performed perfectly in key moments. Really, really impressive. So I hope they can pull it off. Fehoko and Gaziano, I have my eye on in particular. What they do with Merrill, I'm not quite sure. Fehoko sort of got that start, and then Merrill kind of rotated in. Gaziano, I think, played the third most or second most snaps, if I'm not mistaken, behind Justin Jones. But those Fehoko and Gaziano in particular, I have my eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're obviously, you know, big fans of those two, and they, you know, they stepped up in a big way. I haven't watched much of the defensive all 22 film, but what I have seen, you know, it's just been a really good surprise to see those two playing so well. You know, it's going to be interesting to watch. You know, I did my Broncos interview already with Nick Kendall, who writes for the Mile High Huddle. And one of the things that we talked about is the Chargers run defense, although Sunday's performance against the Steelers took them from, I think, 154 yards per game to 144. So that did quite a well. They're still last in yards per game, but rush defense in terms of EPA per play, according to Daniel Popper, is 17th since the bye week. So they have made some real strides in that regard, but this is a big test this week. Because unlike the Steelers, the Broncos will continue to run the ball almost regardless of what the score is or what is working or not working. Whereas the Steelers, it felt like, really kind of abandoned the run game in the second half. So this is going to be an interesting test. Of course, you have the Melvin Gordon possibility for a revenge game. To our guy, Javonte Williams, who we both really loved in the draft, is no joke either. So this is going to be a very big test for the Chargers. And I think this will be able to really tell us a lot about the front seven, in particular, those two players that we just mentioned, Joe Gaziano and Braden Fehoko.
Yeah, I would certainly take Najee Harris at least as a prospect over the other two guys in Denver. Sure. But the combination of them and be able to rotate through those guys, their interior, especially if they're all healthy compared to what the Steelers had last week, they should be better. I do think they are probably a better rushing attack. Even though Najee Harris, again, I would take him over the other two. I think a combination of the two. I don't know how often Bridgewater uses his legs, but still, though, I think, like you said, it's a really, really big test. If they can pull it off this week, then I think we're going to see some serious changes along the defensive line.
Yeah, and, you know, initially looking at the snap counts from Sunday, you see Kenneth Murray, 15 snaps, and only 10 snaps as an inside linebacker. So, you know, initially I looked at that and I was like, okay, like Brandon Staley's showing us that he's not afraid to, you know, reduce someone's role. But then, you know, it came out that he apparently rolled his ankle again. So they were being careful, really only using him on passing down situations. So that's going to be interesting how this one plays out, because I don't know if Kenneth Murray is going to play. I don't know if he's going to practice. I don't know if they're going to be careful with him. But I think that's another thing to keep an eye on this week in terms of the run defense against the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't realize he had hurt himself. Do you recall when the injury popped up?
Popper said it was early in the game, but then he still went back in the second half. You know, he still played sparingly. So I don't know if it was just like a pain management thing. They were trying to keep him fresh.
Gotcha.
That's definitely a storyline to, you know, keep an eye on, because this was the first time really since week two against the Cowboys that all three linebackers were healthy, and Murray played 10 snaps as an off-ball linebacker. So I don't know, like, I don't remember him getting injured. You know, like I said, me I haven't either. Watched the film and like seeing him if he was limping or anything like that. So I don't know how much I buy that yet. Of course, you know, it is Tuesday. A lot can change between now and Saturday when game time hits. So I think that's just a really interesting storyline to keep an eye on, is how, you know, this is going to be the first time, like I said, that we see all three linebackers on the field, presumably healthy all the same time as well.
Yeah, I thought the early rotations that they had were a bit surprising to me along the kind of that front seven. I didn't expect Fehoko to be out there on the first play so early. I mean, then we saw like Rumpf in there instead of maybe like a Fackrell, but maybe because last week or the week prior against the Vikings, you know, Rumpf took a backseat because of Murray. I guess maybe at that point, if Murray was hurt early, that would explain why Rumpf was in there, because I didn't expect, you know, with Murray healthy, I didn't expect Rumpf to be out there, but Rumpf was out there. So again, I want to see another game, like, especially if everybody's healthy. Maybe it was just an injury thing, but the rotation early on was certainly different than what I expected, but maybe it was an injury thing.
Yeah. And then the other injury, of course, that we have to talk about, unfortunately, is Asante Samuel Jr. He was confirmed again today to have his second concussion in 3 weeks. So it's concerning for his long-term health. Brandon Staley said that they don't know how severe it is yet. They don't know if he's going to be missing time, if any. But Daniel Popper on his live stream said that we should not expect to see Asante Samuel Jr. on a field anytime soon. As someone who has struggled with concussions in high school, I can tell you getting two in the same season is no joke. Like that second one, when I was a junior in high school, I had one concussion in my opening game, and then I had a second concussion in the third game, and I missed the rest of the season. So, you know, obviously every concussion is different. Every person handles them differently. But I have a tough time imagining that Asante Samuel Jr. plays in the next few weeks.
No, and nor should he have to. And I get that you want to, compete, you want to win, you're a rookie, you want to keep your spot, but no, it's all about health at this point. Like last year, I'm pretty sure Joey Bosa tried to get back on the field after that second concussion, but they gave him all the time, and they basically, without putting him on season-ending IR, they kind of protected him from himself and going out there and getting, hurt again. So, yeah, I'd like to have him out there when thinking about the matchup the secondary is going to have with these receivers. Would love to have him out there, but, protect yourself first. You have an entire career ahead of you. The next three games or whatever it is, they don't really matter that much.
Yeah, and if we're being honest, like, he's been the most reliable corner for the Chargers this year. Michael Davis has been up and down. Taewon Campbell, Chris Harris, very, up and down as well. So it's a big loss, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. A couple people saying in the chat right now that the Chargers should put him on IR, and I tend to agree. Give him 3 weeks to really recover, take some time that he needs to, and that also gives the Chargers some flexibility in terms of the roster. Then you can, if you want to keep Keandre Thomas on the roster, if you want to sign somebody from a practice squad, whatever the case may be, I think from a roster standpoint, putting Asante Samuel Jr. on injured reserve would give them more options.
Yeah, it's a good call. Or just let them keep Fajoko on the roster. If he shows out again, but you're out of a roster spot because you won't cut your RB52, then, at least you get to keep him on the roster. So there's the one silver lining, I guess.
Hey, man, Philip Lindsay would sure look pretty pretty nice in powder blues. So,
again, one of those things, I don't know what he's end up signing for in Houston. I don't know why all those running backs went to Houston for very little money. All six of them, whatever, from 5 years ago were a pretty dominant group. But, you have an opportunity here. I get why they wouldn't have signed a running back at the time, but you've seen your core now. You know that it's just not working with Kelly. Roundtree, there's some flashes at least, so hold on to him, of course. But, you need something. And, Jackson, he might come back this week, or he might play more snaps this week, but I don't expect him to hang around for another week because he's going to get hurt. So, bringing someone like Lindsay, I wouldn't mind that, but that's it's not going to happen, unfortunately.
No, so I'm looking at his contract details right now, and I don't understand why they cut him. They signed him for a $2.5 million base salary, and he's a $2 million dead cap hit. So they gain literally nothing. They gain nothing by cutting him. I don't understand that. So as Holden points out in the chat, he does go through waivers, so we could presumably find out tomorrow if he signs somewhere. Or if a team claims him, rather, if he does not get claimed by a team tomorrow, then he is a free agent. So it makes so much sense to me. Like this coaching staff was around him in Denver. Ronaldo Hill and Brandon Staley were all in Denver when Lindsay had his best season 2 years ago in 2019. So I think it makes so much sense in the world, man. But it's, for whatever reason, that they love these players. So that's another interesting snap count one too. Justin Jackson only played 5 snaps on Sunday. Larry Roundtree played 19, which I think was the second most he had played all season long. Had that one really good run that didn't count. But I mean, Justin Jackson had a drop. He had a carry where he had a clear alleyway to the right side, and he just kept going straight right into a defensive player. So, I've mentioned this before. I don't know how much Justin Jackson has in the tank, unfortunately. Like, he's just not really, outside of the 180-yard run, it's just been bad. Like, he hasn't played well at all. He's been injured a bunch of times. So, I don't know, man. Like, signing Philip Lindsay just makes too much sense to me.
Yeah. Jackson's so hit or miss. Literally, is hit or miss. Yeah. It's, you know, injured or 75 yard run where he get caught from behind, unfortunately. But you know, it's JC Jackson, so I get it. But you know, they need to bring somebody else in. I just can't imagine, like, you're going into the postseason. You have a good offensive line. Most of it is pretty good. And I even think like Storm Norton's a decent run blocker too. Yeah. You got to have somebody else out there. I mean, they won't do it. That's frustrating. And it's going to be a point of emphasis next season. Like, they are going to probably sign a veteran anyway, or have to draft a guy. If Lindsay's right there and you have a relationship with him, sign him now, get him in now, get him a part of your offense now. If it works, problem solved. Sign him again for a cheap deal next year.
Yes.
Now you have a really good 1-2 punch. Like, you could have that relationship working right now instead of having to worry about next year and maybe having to outbid someone for a running back that's the same. Honestly, Philip Lindsay, unless there was something in Houston that we don't know about, like, I know the numbers aren't good, but I don't really expect it to be good in Houston. And this line, well, okay, I would say this line could make a running back good, but then we've seen Roundtree and Kelly, so maybe I take that back. But I think behind this line, you know, Lindsay's numbers should be better. And so why not work on that relationship right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this offensive line, specifically the left side, it's insane. Like, I said this on Twitter yesterday. Like, last season, you know, I would sit there and I would watch the All-22, and I would just want to, like, throw my computer at the wall watching this last year's offensive line just struggle to generate any kind of push, struggle with the most basic of stunts and blitzes. And this year, it's so nice. I can just sit back here on my desk, put on the tape, and just enjoy offensive line play again. Like, it's amazing the difference. And that's with Storm Norton, you know, giving up a shit show against Alex Highsmith. So it's just been, like, it's so incredible the difference. And, you know, the two of us both now have plays as our headers on Twitter where the offensive line just completely opens up the Red Sea. Yeah. And so I agree. I think Philip Lindsay would be such a good addition here. And I think my favorite thing about Lindsay, or the thing that I always hated, was that he was a home run hit waiting to happen. At
he was.
Like, you never know with a guy like that when an explosive play is coming. And I think that's a big thing that is missing from this team right now. I love Austin Ekeler, but he's not really like an explosive run creator. You know, Philip Lindsay can hit a hole and he's gone. So I think Philip Lindsay would be a great addition in that regard. A couple people have asked me about pass blocking. Thomas has in the chat right now. I honestly have no idea. I know that was a criticism of him early when he was a rookie, but I think between Ekeler and Larry Roundtree, I think you can really kind of manage that, because both of those two players are really good at pass blocking. Austin Ekeler had the blitz pickup of the year on Mike Williams' touchdown. Like, that play by Ekeler was honestly like such a high level, smart, intelligent play. And he just, like, body that guy, sent him flying. So I think with Ekeler and Roundtree, you have the pass blocking covered.
Yeah, I think it was Jeff Schwartz that pointed out that, you know, it was not just like pass protection. Like, he aggressively went after the blitzer, the defender, whoever that was, and just turned him into a handstand. I've never seen a defender go from upright to completely just a flip of 180 into a handstand before. But that's Austin Ekeler, man. Like, he earns his money. That's got to be the best contract, right, of any player out there. I mean, who overperforms, other than a rookie deal, who overperforms more than Ekeler on that contract? So, yeah, I'm all for it. If Philip Lindsay's not like the best pass blocker, then, you know, if he's a good runner, he's better than Joshua Kelly, who gave up a blitz, you know, a sack to Herbert 2 weeks ago. So if he's at least a better runner, I'll take the same pass blocking.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So in terms of the Broncos, again, we don't have a ton of injury updates right now. Garrett Bowles, former Utah Ute legend, is currently on the COVID list as well. So that could be potentially very impactful for the University of Utah football team this week, because he was in Utah for that Oregon game this past weekend.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I don't know about that one. That could be tough for for my Utah Utes. In terms of their other injuries, though, Bobby Massey, who's been their right tackle, we'll talk about him later, but he was injured during the Dallas game. He missed the Philadelphia Eagles game. He potentially is coming back this week. So, you know, that is something to keep an eye on. The Baron Browning, one of their only remaining linebackers, could have a chance to play this week as well. But that's really all we have in terms of Broncos injuries.
Yeah, I was talking to Devin Caney, who was on the show. I apologize if I said her name wrong, but she was one of our best guests, and I can't believe I don't know how to say her name correctly. Anyway, she covers the Eagles, and I asked her, what did the Eagles do so well to stop the Broncos? And they said, we just got pressure on them. They were able to, again, that's how you stop an offense, that's how you stop the quarterback, but they were able to get pressure, weren't able to do that against the Chargers, so I don't know if that was a game plan thing or what, but if this offensive line is potentially depleted, especially if Bowles is not able to go, and doesn't sound like he will, great. Joey Bosa is on a tear right now. This team has generated 30 pressures the last 2 weeks. Keep it going. This team's winning in the trenches right now. Couldn't capitalize on it against the Vikings. And I guess the defense really couldn't capitalize on it against the Steelers. But, keep going. Keep winning in the trenches. And I think they can pull out a win in Denver, which they haven't done in a while.
Yeah. So I know, Graham Glasgow is their normal left guard. He's injured and is out for the season. He's not going to play. Garrett Bowles is not going to play because he tested positive for COVID and he's unvaccinated. So they're kind of going through the similar situation as we are. They're just switching sides.
Yeah.
So if Bobby Massey is back, you'll have him and Dalton Risner next to each other. That's a good right side, solid right side. Risner, I think, is one of the better guards in the league. And then you have Quinn Meinerz probably starting at left guard. And if Bowles is not going to play, they'll have Calvin Anderson starting at left tackle again. We'll talk about some of those players later, but just wanted to bring that up. All right, go ahead, Tyler.
Oh, I was going to ask. I'm pretty sure I've only seen Joey Bosa rush the right guard. I've never seen him go after the left guard, but if possible,
his sack was against the left guard.
Great. I'm glad I didn't get to the end of the game. Yeah, so oops. Well, then great, because Quinn Meinerz, he's a very strong, stout guy. Don't get me wrong. Very kind of ferocious guy. But, unless things have changed, maybe they have. The technique just really wasn't there. And I think Bosa is someone who could absolutely take advantage of that.
Yeah, I was just looking at this. He's got PFF grades, grain of salt. But
sure.
His pass blocking grade against the Eagles was a 30. So, he's a rookie from Wisconsin Whitewater. He's going to struggle.
Yeah, totally.
Pass blocking, just because that's the nature of the beast, but, he's a very physically gifted and physically imposing offensive lineman. So I expect him to make more of an impact in the rushing attack than the pass blocking. So if the Chargers want to go and isolate, that side of things, I would obviously Joey Bosa can beat anyone, right? But I would much rather see Joey Bosa rush the interior against Quinn Meinerz as opposed to Dalton Risner.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'd say both edge rushers are healthy. I don't know. People were talking about, I think to me, it felt like the same rate of them trying to put Joey Bosa inside as the last couple of weeks. Some people said it was more to me. And I haven't watched the game all the way through. It felt the same to me. But, if they could do it a couple more times, I'm all for it.
Yeah, he didn't practice, right? So that could have been something. But
according
to Pro Football Focus, he rushed from the inside or played on the inside 8 times, which was about the same as the Vikings. I think the Vikings was 9 or 10. I expect that to continue. They'll rush him more, right? They said they would after the Patriots game. They said that wasn't part of the plan and they didn't do it. So I expect him to play on the inside about 10-ish snaps, give or take a few.
That sounds about right. Was the Denver Broncos game last year the game where you saw Linval Joseph rush from a wide 9?
Yes.
Dang it. We're going to miss that this week.
Yes, because Melvin was out. Melvin was out. Chenna was out. And then Joey had the concussion. So they had the interior was Damian Square. And I forget who the other interior was. And then it was Justin Jones. And it was Jerry Tillery and Linval Joseph as the defensive ends. It was so bad. I don't ever want to see that happen again.
Unsurprisingly, they gave up a big lead and lost that game.
So you never know what happens in Denver. It's going to be a wild week. And I'm really excited for this one because, I think the Chargers are a good team. I'm not saying that they're a great team. I'm not saying that they're contenders. But this is a game that a team like the Chargers should win. And that really is kind of my biggest storyline of the week as we kind of move into really previewing this one. Again, this is our week 12 preview, Chargers traveling to Mile High. We've kind of seen in the past that this team wins a big game, has just a little bit of a letdown. Austin Eckler said that after the Vikings game, they had their best week of practice of the season, which we heard from a couple of players ahead of the Eagles game, which we heard a couple players ahead of the Chiefs game. So it's like, all right, so we need to get this team practicing at the same level every single week. You know, I was listening to Mitchell Schwartz on the Athletic Football Show, and one of the things that he said in terms of trap games, which I thought was really interesting, was that fans look at trap games as teams looking ahead, whereas from a player standpoint, it's more so what happened the game before. So you play the Steelers on Sunday Night Football, you have this very emotional game, you lose, you potentially blow a lead, you come back, and it's just an emotionally draining and physically draining game. Now you play the Denver Broncos, a division rival. So, you know, this could be a trap game for the Chargers, but not because they're looking ahead to the Bengals, right? But because of what happened the previous week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'm curious to see really what happens to this team in this game, because the Broncos are not very good. I know that they beat the Cowboys and destroyed them a couple weeks ago, but yeah, on a fluke. But the defense, the Broncos defense is not in a good spot. This is not the same old Broncos defense that we're used to.
No,
really, outside of Draymond Jones and Patrick Surtain and Justin Simmons, they don't have a whole lot of like blue chip players, which we're not used to seeing this team. So this is a game where the Chargers offense in particular should really come out and be able to get whatever they want. That was the same thing last week. It's the same thing against the Vikings. You have injuries, you have poor coaching, whatever. So the Chargers offense, to me, again, is the key thing, because, you know, we'll talk about the defense, you know, more down the road. But Daniel Popper pointed this out today on a tweet. The Chargers offense right now is currently third in the league in DVOA rankings. They are second in EPA per play, and they are first in EPA per drive. So this Chargers offense is moving the ball at will. They are scoring points. They just have to be able to consistently do that, you know, because their numbers and their data is really showing that this offense is a hyper-efficient offense, and they need to do that this week. Get out to an early lead. Do not let the Broncos be in a positive or neutral game script. Force them to throw the football as much as often with Teddy Bridgewater. And I think that really is the recipe for success this week. The offense is the key, as always.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It seems like this team lives or dies by that offense. And sure, Justin Herbert's your quarterback, so yeah, you're going to live and die by your quarterback. But like, if he's not good, nobody's good. The defense isn't really in a good spot right now either, especially with some of these COVID, you know, injuries or whatever it is. Yeah, Mile High is such a weird one for them. I want to see the secondary step up in a way that they kind of did at the beginning of the year last year, or, you know, beginning of the game last year, and then they just didn't. I mean, that game is when you noticed, you know, Tavon Campbell, like, I don't remember what they officially ruled the issue was between, like, Jenkins or Campbell on that touchdown, but then Adderley, who's back from injury now and should have be, like, really good to go. You know, last week he came back, but now he should be, you know, officially, like, really good to go. Those guys kind of blew it in Denver last year, especially Adderley. Like, that was the game that was always in my mind where he screwed up and cost the team, you know, maybe two touchdowns and a field goal or whatever it was. It was not pretty and one of his worst games. And that's what I was worried about going into this season. He's so much more improved now. And I think it's kind of a redemption game for him. But then, yeah, can this offense also continue? Thankfully, there's no more Von Miller to pick off the wide receiver screen that he picked off like twice in a row against Rivers or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I do think, as Arjun points out too, can Staley outcoach his mentor? I think so. Unfortunately, it's two defensive guys going at each other, so it's not like they really, you know, are going against each other. But yes, Arjun, Jason did get roasted on Twitter for calling out Rayshon. Don't call out Rayshon Jenkins. He searches his name.
But, yeah, don't call it Rayshon Jenkins, Denzel Perryman, Desmond King, all those guys' name shirts.
Yeah, you can call it, say good things about Kaiser White, though. He'll retweet the hell out of Steven, apparently. but yeah, no, I just really want to see the secondary put it together, because it's a horrible stretch of quarterbacks they play. Like, Kirk Cousins, maybe, but like after the bye, it's been Jalen Hurts. I'm sorry, it's been Mac Jones, who was fine, but they kind of got toasted. No takeaways there. Jalen Hurts, no takeaways there. Kirk Cousins had some opportunities, no takeaways there. No takeaways against Big Ben. These aren't great quarterbacks, and they looked much better against Mahomes for whatever reason. But just since the bye, it's like, where's the secondary going? So, you know, fortunately, yes, the Chargers do have an offense. The Broncos, I thought, were going to be way, way better than they were this year, at least on defense. And the Eagles just rolled over them. So, and you know, I think the Eagles have a good offense, but I didn't think they were you know, blowing out the Broncos kind of offense. So, you know, yeah, they need to get it together. This is a big win. Of the games that they could have played this year, to tell me that Staley was a legit head coach, one of them's in Kansas City, or at least beating Kansas City. One's the Patriots, and they lost. And the other one is at Denver. For whatever reason, even with Herbert putting up, you know, 30 points or whatever he did last year, they still lost. Like, it is just so hard for this team to win in Denver. So if Staley wants to, I think he is a good head coach and an elite head coach in the future and for many years to come. But if he wants to show me that it's different early, got to win in Denver.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, just to put a bow on a secondary conversation, obviously not having Asante Samuel Jr. is going to be huge. I'm hopeful that Alohi Gilman is able to come back in this one, because Trey Marshall has really, you know, caused a couple of broken coverages for this team. Mm. And I think I trust Alohi Gilman a little bit more there. Of course, you know, that, I think that applies to Mark Webb too. But Daniel Popper pointed out too in his article today, let me make sure I get this one right. The Chargers defense is 31st in the league in third down conversion rate. So, the, you know, we've flipped, right? Like, the run defense was the weakness, pass defense was good. Now we're the other way. And it, of course, injuries have contributed to that fact. So if there were ever a game for Michael Davis to, you know, flash his shutting down Stephon Diggs kind of ability, or Tavon Campbell to, you know, return to form and create some turnovers, this is it. So, you know, I think the strength of the Broncos heading into this season was their receiving core. I think that still is the case now, at least in terms of roster groups. And so, you know, you have Tim Patrick and Cortland Sutton that are able to kind of play the X and the Z and go deep. You have Jerry Jeudy, who is a technician and goes for the middle. And you you even have KJ Hamler, who I think he's still playing. I can't remember if
I thought he got hurt. Or not.
Okay. So yeah, KJ got hurt. But still, that's a hyper-talented trio who have been very productive. And so this is a big week for the secondary. Unfortunately, we'll see Chris Harris on Jerry Jeudy for most of the game. So that's going to be fun. But this is a big week for them. They have to step up. They have to figure it out. I'm wondering as I'm talking right now if we see Derwin James play a little bit more in the slot as opposed to playing deep, which I think would help kind of mitigate the loss of Asante Samuel Jr. But you're right. This is a big week. Pass defense has been a major concern the last few weeks. They got kind of cooked this past week against Big Ben and Deontay Johnson. Of course, they got destroyed by Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson. So it's tough right now.
Yeah, you mentioned Derwin James in the slot, and I think he really only played in the slot because Harris was out. But the situation feels kind of similar. Just two. I mean, now again, they had Jefferson and Thielen. He didn't do this, but you know, I think he really has to. Like, I don't want Chris Harris Jr. out there playing against. Like, I just don't want to watch that. And you know, for other guys, like, okay, so like Sutton's more like, you know, I to me at least a bigger sort of more athletic sort of guy. I think Davis can roll with that, and at least the speed of someone like Tim Patrick or whatever he does, I think Tavon Campbell can roll with that. But there's just a shiftiness that Jerry Jeudy has that maybe kind of like a Keenan Allen has. And I don't see Chris Harris Jr. being able to keep with that at all. No. I really don't. And Derwin James is someone who can. And so, you know, and couple that with the fact that the couple of times I've watched Teddy Bridgewater, I believe he's improved. But when I watched him against the Raiders, and I was just watching him live, he couldn't hit a deep ball to save his life. And maybe that just comes with chemistry and working with receivers. So, like, if I'm more worried about Jerry Jeudy in the intermediate than someone deep. And, you know, I think the defense in general will prevent that. I think the guys that do go deep, you know, I think Campbell and Davis can take care of those guys. So yeah, I'm putting Derwin James in the slot if I possibly can. Don't know how often he'll play there. He does have to also support the run and all that. But yeah, I would give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles do this to everybody, right? You know, like they force everybody to check it down. But he only attempted one pass that went more than 15 yards in the air against the Eagles. So obviously the Eagles and the Chargers run similar schemes, although the Chargers are much more aggressive and adapt a little bit more than the Eagles do, but similar philosophies. So I think that's going to be an interesting one. So we got a couple super chat questions from Envy Talent, who is always a big supporter of the show. So I wanted to address those really quickly. The first one, he says, "Hey, did you also forget that Herbert had running capabilities? Because I did. It's scary to watch, but man, did it open up the offense."
It was something I kind of hinted at in the breakdown that I did, but it was just like, let's let him run one more time a game, because he did it once against the Eagles for a touchdown and once for a first down against the Vikings. So it's like, hey, you know, if especially if you're not reading coverages deep and you just aren't figuring it out, if it's available, take it. Take your 8 yards, take your 10 yards, whatever it is. Did not expect him to set, you know, an NFL record for most yards, you know, rushing and passing, at least in those two totals in NFL history. I never expected him to set a historic record in that department. But great. It was, like you said, it was a scary thing to watch. It was a great thing to watch. Scary if you're the defense. And it does open up the offense. And I think if you're struggling and teams are playing deep against you, and, you know, go for it. Run it. Why not? And I think there's a couple of times I got a little worried. Like, there's a couple of times he will run into the center for whatever reason. He did that once kind of against the Patriots. He did it once against the Steelers, something like that, up in the middle. There was a holding or whatever it was. There's some sort of penalty that negated it. But there's a couple of times it's a little questionable. But let him go for it. If he screws up one time a game, oh well. Like, let him go for a couple of times. Get more comfortable. Because if teams are playing deep, they're playing two deep safeties, or they're in spread, or they're in empty, and the whole defense is spread out in man or whatever it is, go for it. It's available, and it's certainly better than, you know, chucking it up and praying it works. Even though it's not an explosive passing play, like, sure, you want to go for a deep find, but he picked up 90, 92, whatever yards it was. So I have nothing against it.
No, I really like the way that he was decisive with running the football. You know, there were a couple instances where me and you were talking, right? Like, I felt like he could have been just equally as decisive in running or throwing. So it's a balance, right? You know, he said after the game that it was more so what the Steelers were doing and the heavy man coverage scheme that they were employing that allowed him to have those rushing lanes. So, you know, I this isn't going to turn into like a Lamar Jackson situation where you're running him, you know, on design runs 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times a game. But it's great to know that he can do that. It makes things more difficult for defenses. Maybe you see them kind of cage rush him a little bit more, which obviously helps the offensive line. So it was great to see. And frankly, the Chargers needed that. So let's move on to our key matchups and X factors in this one. And Tyler, I'll let you go first. What is your key matchup of the day?
We already alluded to it, so I'll just say who it was, and I'll try to find something else. I was going to talk about the secondary versus wide receivers, because it is kind of like a key matchup. Like you said, this Denver Broncos, the strength of their team right now are their receivers, and secondary got wrecked the last couple of weeks. So it's not a key match. It's a key matchup for, you know, Staley to show his defense, for this team to rebound, all those things. But key matchup otherwise, what would I go with? I don't know that. Never mind. That's what I would have gone with. So I don't know what else to pick. Herbert versus, you know, we just talked about this too, but Herbert the runner. I want to see Herbert run. That's kind of the matchup that I'm more interested in. Does that continue? It seemed like every time the Steelers were playing man-to-man or had those two deep safeties, they went spread, they went empty. Herbert said thanks and took off. So does that matchup continue? Does Lombardi incorporate that into their game plan a little bit more? I don't know if they'll do that or just continue to give him the green light to run. I don't see him as much of a design run kind of guy outside of those RPOs where they move and chuck it to Palmer or move and get it to Williams deep. But that's a matchup I'm looking forward to. Who he matches up with, I don't know who's in the Denver linebacker core, honestly. But you're going against Simmons and stuff like that. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of my key matchup outside of the secondary versus wide receivers. We already talked about everything. I'm out of things to talk about.
There are a few key matchups that I think, you know, we could dive into. As Arjun points out, the Broncos linebackers are worse in coverage than Devin Bush. So I feel like I've said this every single week, like Austin Eckler should be able to eat whichever linebacker is alive. But I wanted to specifically bring up something about Kenny Young and really just the Broncos linebacker problems in general, because I didn't really realize how bad. Obviously, I knew like Josie Jewell was injured, and, you know, they traded for Kenny Young. They signed Micah Kizer. But I didn't really realize how bad the Broncos have had it at the linebacker position until I pulled up, you know, the whole PFF stats. So their top four tacklers are their four secondary members. So it's Kareem Jackson, Justin Simmons, Patrick Surtain, and Ronald Darby are their four leading tacklers. So that's not good. That's very, very bad. So obviously they traded for Kenny Young, and I wanted to mention this because he hasn't really been like full in the Broncos rotation. Like, they're still kind of rotating him in, but obviously he played for the Rams, and one of the reasons that the Rams traded him away was because he was a liability in coverage. So he started 8 games, I think, for the Rams, but the first 5 games specifically for the Rams, he was targeted 28 times and he allowed 28 receptions for 233 yards and 2 touchdowns. So he was getting cooked in coverage. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers specifically targeted him 10 times and they converted 10 of those targets into receptions. So he is a linebacker that can absolutely be had in coverage. Again, that's Austin Eckler. Like, this is literally me every week. I'm like my first instinct now is to just go look at like coverage stats for these key matchups. And every single week I'm like, wow, this linebacker on this team is terrible in coverage. Austin Eckler is going to feast this week. And what does Austin Eckler do every single week? He feasts. Like, he's been so incredible this year. And I think he's going to have another big one in this one.
Yeah, no, that's a great call there. Austin Eckler, he feasts versus everyone. But if the matchup is there, take it. And the Chargers really, like we talked about in the live stream last time, it really felt like they did emphasize taking advantage of players who are not good in coverage or who are weaker at certain things. Devin Bush, at some point, I think he was good. He's a former first-round pick. But Eckler just kind of made mincemeat out of him. He just could not keep up with him. Most linebackers can't. So in this particular situation, if you have a guy who's worse than Eckler, 28 out of 28, they really got him 28 out of 28 times.
It was bad.
That's not good. That's really bad. The next time I talk about anybody poorly on this team, I'm going to remember that, because that is as bad as it gets. So yeah, go after him. A couple of people are talking about the tight ends out here too. Sure. If they can catch the ball, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, the Chargers had 4 drops again on Sunday, and 3 of them were by tight end. So we just need to get everybody on that team to start doing the tennis ball thing that Deontay Johnson was doing in the offseason, because for whatever reason that has worked for him, and I think the Chargers needed to do that as well. Since Alex isn't here, I prepared a couple of key matchups. So the other key matchup I want to talk about is Michael Schofield and Storm Norton versus Draymond Jones. Draymond Jones, somebody that you and I talked with about the Chargers potentially trading for at the deadline. Of course, it didn't happen. But Draymond Jones, believe it or not, has been their most consistent pass rusher over the last month or so of the season. So Draymond Jones primarily lines up on the left end of their defense. So essentially, like, think of him as like a Justin Jones or Jerry Tillery type of role. He is a defensive tackle, but he's not going to go up against Corey Linsley very, very often. So he lines up most over the left guard or over the left tackle, or right tackle and right guard, excuse me, flip-flop that one. So on the season, he has 26 total pressures and 3 sacks. 16 of those total pressures are over the last 4 weeks, and all 3 of his sacks are over the last 4 weeks. So he is really coming into his own over the last little bit. He's also got 9 run stops in that time. He's graded as a 71 in run defense. So to me, Draymond Jones really is the only player on that defensive line that really kind of gives me pause. Obviously, no Bradley Chubb in this one, no Von Miller in this one. I think Jonathan Cooper is their best edge rusher at this point, and he's a rookie that's very up and down. So to me, if you can keep Draymond Jones away from Justin Herbert, I feel pretty good about the protection plan. Obviously, we saw the Chargers do a great job against Cam Hayward. Yep. But that was mostly Matt Filer and Rashawn Slater and Corey Linsley. Like, this is a different challenge because you have Schofield and Norton. We've seen time and time again really struggle in pass blocking. So Draymond Jones, to me, more so than Austin Eckler versus the linebackers, I think Draymond Jones and how they handle him is going to be the key for the offensive line this week.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was coming on so strong the last couple of weeks. Good for him. By the time we're talking about this trade deadline, it's like, well, he's sort of like Jerry Tillery in stats. He's just another body that would be a good rotation. For him to come on that strong the last couple of weeks, that's pretty impressive. Yeah. I don't watch the offensive line. Did you feel like Hayward was only lining up across Filer and Slater?
Yes.
That's interesting. Why? why would somebody do that?
I honestly don't know, man. Like, there are some coaches around the league that just kind of refuse to move players around. Like, we saw that with Joey Bosa, who like almost exclusively rushed against right tackles with Gus Bradley and company, whereas Melvin Ingram's moving all over the place. So that could be some of it. It could have been that, you know, Cam Hayward just wanted to go up against his buddy Matt Filer. So I don't know, but I sure am glad as hell that they didn't move him to the other side very often. And Matt Filer did such a good job in that situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how this Schofield and Norton tandem handle Draymond Jones, because I think he really is, you know, an ascending player right now.
So what do you think happened with, I'm jumping around the offensive line now. So if he does go up against the offensive line on that right side, yeah. What happened with Norton this past week? Because I feel like we weren't hearing his name a lot outside of the penalties. Yeah. Then you tallied up, you know, and you do your different tallies, and sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower. You thought he had an awful game. So what happened there? Because I don't think we're talking about that. We just all just assume he gave up. I think Pro Football Focus is what, 3 pressures, 4 pressures, maybe?
PFF had him as 2 pressures and 2 sacks.
Oh wow!
So I gave him, yeah. So I gave him 6 pressures, and if I mm-hmm. was mean, like if I was in a bad mood last night watching this, I could have given him like 7 or 8.
Nice.
But Alex Highsmith really just roasted him. Like, you know, I think Highsmith is a good player, but he's definitely not a great player. But mm-hmm. you know, the issue last night with Storm is that he just, I don't know what it was, but he just had a really poor plan of attack, because it was a lot of two-hand striking against Alex Highsmith, and mm-hmm. you know, it was a lot of poor leverage. You know, his shoulders come over his toes half the time. So Alex Highsmith, anytime he did any kind of counter, you know, whether it was a cross chop or the spin move, which got Norton pretty badly, he just left Norton in the dust. So there were a couple times that it was like almost instantaneous that Norton got beat, and Herbert would, you know, roll out left or you know, quick game it. So Norton had a rough day against Alex Highsmith, and it was just a lot of poor technique, specifically with his hand placement, left him on the ground like 7, 8, 9 times. It felt like I was watching Sam Tevi again in that regard. So
that's great.
It was not pretty. Again, we saw him play pretty well against Philadelphia and Minnesota, but this past week against the Steelers was a bad Storm Norton game.
That's wonderful. I mean, Highsmith was the guy that they started over Ingram, right? That's the guy they've had this yeah. entire time. Okay. Yeah. So at least he's like they've had big plans for him. Yeah. Didn't hear something good. Cooper's a guy, at least from the draft, that I don't think either of us were super high on. To me, he was just a guy that I think tested very well. And it was like a high effort, big program, Ohio State kind of guy. But I never really struck him as, it never really struck me as like a technique counters kind of guy. But if you're playing someone like Norton, doesn't really have that toolkit, could take advantage of him. So yeah, once again, Norton is a problem.
Yeah. I haven't watched any Broncos film. Mm-hmm. If this were a normal week, I would have dived into it, but since we're doing this on Tuesday.
Yes.
But what I remember from my evaluation of Cooper at Ohio State was that it was a lot of speed rushes and a lot of speed mm-hmm. to power rushes. There wasn't a ton of technical ability. I think he had a couple seasons where he didn't play a single game because he was just injured. So I think that was really why he was a 7th-round draft pick, is just he had a lengthy injury history. I thought he played pretty well at the Senior Bowl from what I remember, but it's not a lot of technical ability. Again, that could have changed. I haven't watched any Broncos film, but just based at Ohio State, you know, it was a lot of speed to power rushes and a lot of speed rushes. If you can, you know, anchor down against him, you're probably pretty fine. If you're not allowing him to turn the corner on you, you're probably fine. But, yeah. You know, Storm Norton has to have a better plan of attack, and he's got to be more consistent with his leverage, because, you know, this is, again, you know, if you're allowing pressure from Draymond Jones and Storm Norton, like, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, no, definitely not good. Oh, boy.
That's the thing, though, with Storm Norton. It's one good game here, bad game here.
Yeah. A
couple good games, a couple bad games. He's just really up and down. Like, as you said today on Twitter, right? Like, just go all in on the right tackle position this year, this next offseason. And mm-hmm. because, you know, I think Norton can be like a training camp body next year. Like, I'm not against bringing him back necessarily. But, like, if you want to give him the chance to beat out like a 1 year cheap veteran, like, that's mm-hmm. fine to me. Like, but you have to bring in competition. You can't just hand him the swing tackle position again. You have to bring him competition. Like I said, whether that's a cheap veteran or whether that's, you know, a 6th or 7th round draft pick or something, but you have to bring in competition.
So all things considered, considering the beginning of the season where he was at and some of the struggles, and considering where he is now, is it just the same kind of, or is it just an up and down where last week he was good, this week he wasn't good?
It's up and down. Like, I thought he played pretty well against the Vikings, like genuinely pretty well. It's just the inconsistency. Like, I know he's been in the league in professional football for 3-4 years, but this is really his rookie season. Like, this is really the first time that he's getting consistent reps and allowed to be the guy. And unfortunately, unless your name is Rashawn Slater, if you're a rookie offensive lineman, you have some tough moments. So, you know, to me, it's just about the plan of attack and, you know, continuing to coach him up, because, you know, a lot of the times when you're an offensive lineman and you're young and you're playing against a young guy or another really good pass rusher, excuse me, things can just, you know, snowball. And that's what it felt like on Sunday. That's what it felt like against Micah Parsons. It's what it felt like against who was the other bad game that he had? I can't remember. Grab Trent Brown in free agency. Hard pass. Hard pass.
So he had Trent Brown. I saw the story about him. I know it's people are kind of wishy-washy, but he's the guy that had the IV or whatever it was, and the air entered his bloodstream, right?
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
And apparently he like considered retirement. Like, he like had such an adverse reaction to it that he thought about retiring. So Trent Brown, when he's on the Patriots, he's very, very good. When he's in other situations, he's not very good. So I'm not interested in that kind of deal. So we'll have to see, you know, what happens in the storm. I think this could be a better game, right? Like, you know, I'm not expecting an Alex Highsmith. Like, he's a good player, you know, all respect to Jonathan Cooper, he's just not there yet. So we'll have to see. But Norton, it really is just a technique thing. It's a plan of attack, and you know, those can absolutely improve. Like, that can change. You just have to reset things every single week, and I think he'll be okay this week. All right, let's talk about some X factors in this one. I'm going to mention here Donald Parham again. Like, I feel like I've mentioned him as an X factor quite a few times, but it felt like in the second half that they really made a concerted effort to target him more often. He had that absurd tight end screen on like the third drive.
Yeah, jeez.
Where he juked a defender and covered like 4 yards of ground the other way. Like, the way this guy can move is just insane to me. So we saw him get targeted on the seam route. He didn't catch it, unfortunately. But if he had, I felt like he probably would have scored, because he's just so good after the catch. So I think that we are slowly seeing Donald Parham get more and more involved in the offense. I think they're trusting him more and more. Brandon Staley said yesterday that they're looking forward to expanding his role. And Jared Cook was like really shaking his hand. Like, he had some hand issue after the drops on Sunday. So maybe Jared Cook is a little limited. Maybe he's out. I don't really know. But I feel like this is the game that Donald Parham is going to establish himself as the guy who's going to be tight end one next year. Like, I expect Jared Cook to still be involved, but I expect from here on out, Donald Parham is going to show this team enough where he is going to earn himself a nice contract extension and really be that tight end one for this team going forward. And I expect a good to big game this week against the Broncos.
I'd love to see it. Like, that play you referenced on the tight end screen, there's a balance and athleticism to him
crazy.
That I did not expect. Like, every time there's a guy who can make a tackle on him in the open field, they're bouncing off of him or they're completely missing him. It doesn't make sense. I don't know if it's just a weird like perception of a human being where you think it's going to be one thing and it ends up being another, but guys can't tackle him. He's excellent after the catch. I really didn't expect that. I expected it from I'm running very fast on a shallow crosser and I'm turning up field sort of thing, but I never expected the open field shiftiness to be that great. So, you know, this whole tight end room is now really starting to take shape. And, you know, in a post Cook world, I'm very confident with the three guys that they have. If they bring back Parham and Anderson, and I assume that they will, because that would be a huge loss to the team if either leave. But Parham's looking excellent out there, aside from the drop, of course. You know, and what's his name? Anderson, like I said, honestly should be a Pro Bowl fullback, because I think he's earned it and he looks excellent out there. And then now McKitty's a thing, and everyone wrote him off as sort of a bust, or not a bust, but a waste of a draft pick. And in some respects, I get it. You want a guard, you want a tackle, you want an interior defensive lineman, but based on what he's shown and what he's sort of flashed in training camp, he really looks like he could be their tight end two, no problem, like next year. If Anderson is technically that H-back, tight end two, sort of, but really their H-back. McKitty, I have no problem with him as tight end two. You know, he completely launched Hayward off of his feet, and if Filer wasn't there at the goal line
today,
yeah, if Filer wasn't there to basically hold up Hayward, Hayward would have been across the formation and on his butt. There's just a good aggressiveness there. It's not just blocking. It's like, it's kind of like Austin Ekeler and his pass block. There's his pass protection on that blitz pickup. It's not just receiving the guy and stopping him. It's going out of your way. He's aggressive. And I think that's, he just looks like a more natural blocker than we ever saw from Parham or Anderson last year. So for him to already look like that, and now they're just involving him a bit in the flat too, it's a really, really solid tight end room. So, you know, I thought about McKitty as my X factor for the third week. At least I finally mean it, and he's actually a factor in the game these days.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good. I'm going to go with Larry Roundtree. I think that potentially there's something there. Is he really like the reason they're going to win? Not necessarily, but I think, and I feel bad for him because he had a touchdown callback against the Chiefs, which was a very good run, but there was a penalty. And then they had the other, you know, what is it, 30-yard run that he had against the Steelers, and that got called back because of a penalty. It feels sometimes like Lombardi in these deep passes where you don't think it's there on the stat sheet, but you see sometimes it's there. It just gets called back because of a penalty. I think Larry Roundtree might take the next step this week. Feels like a hunch. Not really sure why in particular. Eckler's healthy. Jackson will play, I think, or at least a significant amount of snaps. But I feel like they're trying to get him more involved, and he got more involved definitely against the Vikings, and it wasn't great, but you know, it wasn't really a big rushing day for anyone. And then he had a really good run against the Steelers. He even on a Herbert scramble went out and blocked ahead of him. Like he turned around and blocked ahead of him. That's a really good non-rookie thing to do. So I have a little bit of faith in him stepping up just a little bit this week. I don't know if it's going to be amazing, but in a couple of really hard fought yards, and maybe honestly for the first time they can close it out in Denver, which they have not done, I think, since 2013. Yes, they did win in 2018, but the Denver Broncos weren't playing. They didn't care. The Chargers didn't sit. They sat half their starters in the second half. But I think Roundtree is a guy who they sort of leaned on against the Raiders. And in the same way, I think they can do it against the Denver Broncos. Lean on him. I think he can be the X factor, because if he performs well enough, especially at the end of the game where they probably have a lead, and he'd be big in closing this game out.
Yeah, I really agree with that, because you know, I think he had a good run against like the Raiders too that got called back or some, or one of the other teams early in the season. So unfortunately, just getting penalized in the worst way possible again for Larry Roundtree. But I'm a fan of Larry Roundtree, right? Like I think, you know, I really liked him coming out of the draft. He was my sleeper running back for a reason, and I thought that he runs hard. I like the way that, you know, he attacks those things. I think the way that they've used him is just a little off, right? Because it's a lot of dive. It's some tosses. That's not really the way that you use a running back like him. I think you use him more in the inside zone and outside zone kind of scheme where, you know, he's able to just see one lane and hit it. Whereas if you're asking him to do a toss play, it's just, you know, there's too much going on. He's not able to sift through all of that chaos that's happening. And so I think if you make things a little bit more easy for him, allow him to, you know, be more involved in the zone scheme, then you can, you know, allow him to be successful. The Chargers ran a ton of counters against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was like 6 or 7 counters, which is by far the most that I have seen this season. I will talk about that. And I'm going to do a breakdown on those plays. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, it was all to Austin Ekeler. Like, it was great. Like, he scored on 2 of them. But you can give Larry Roundtree those plays, and I think that just kind of helps him gain some confidence that way, because the Chargers do block those counters plays extremely well. So I would like to see them give him some easier opportunities as opposed to, hey, here's this toss play where nobody blocks, so you have to try and make somebody miss in space.
Yeah.
Or here's this dive play for the 37th time in your career. Like, make things a little bit easier for Larry Roundtree. I think that'll help him a lot.
It does feel like a lose-lose sometimes with him rushing the football, and it felt like that many times this year, and sort of for Kelly too, but Kelly feels like more of a vision thing. And for Roundtree, sometimes you'll watch him and it's like, no one would have had yards on that play. Like, unfortunately, just like no one was really going to get yards. Ekeler maybe an extra one because it's Ekeler, but you know, I feel like sometimes it feels like the line just doesn't block for him, and they are. So to me, I guess like you pointed out, toss plays, halfback dive, maybe not just plays that this team doesn't run efficiently, and he keeps getting them and it looks bad on him. So yeah, I think a good mix up in what he does. Interesting that you pointed out all those counters. I can't wait to watch the breakdown then. I didn't realize that they were running so many. That's interesting.
I think one of the reasons there, and I'll talk about this in the breakdown, is like you have Matt Feiler, who is a fantastic puller, and so is Michael Schofield. I think that's like one of my favorite things about Michael Schofield is that he's a fantastic puller. So he's just really smart, understands angles that way. So if this team is going to lean into counter plays in this back half of the season, I'm really excited to see if that is the case or if they go kind of back to their duo outside zone scheme for the most part. Because I would really like to see that. I think counter plays are just a great way to mix it up, and they mix it up in terms of like the personnel packages that they ran them out of. So that was one of my favorite things about watching the film yesterday, was just the variety in which they used counters specifically, and just the run game in general was very it was very complex. It was different. They mixed it up a lot. So I really liked watching the run game on Sunday.
Yeah, I think what doesn't get talked about really at all, because it's all about Herbert and the passing offense, but Lombardi and this offensive line, which deserves so much credit for this. Like, you know, I think Lynn could have a good rushing attack with this offensive line, or at least the main trio. You know, they look so much more improved. Maybe it's a different variety of plays, at least with Eckler. But if they can run counter, that'd be great. The game against the Eagles, it wasn't counter, but we talked about this. It was Anderson came across the formation on the trap block. It wasn't counter, but everything set up the play. It looked like it was going to the right. And everyone bought them going to the right because they thought that the Chargers were just going to set up the field goal, you know, get to the right hash, no problem, you know, don't lose the football, whatever. But instead, they have that Anderson on the trap block. He goes behind Feiler, Eckler goes behind Feiler and gets those 15 yards or whatever it was and sets up a really easy field goal. I love the way that Lombardi, I think, is building this rushing attack. I think it was just a lot of inside to begin the year. You know, they didn't really have a lot installed. They don't work on, you know, after contact and whatever during training camp all that much. But after the bye, it feels like they're really starting to heat up a little bit more outside. Even the toss plays, which aren't great and they aren't working, it's different. They're trying something different. So now if they're working in counters and they're incorporating that more into their offense and it's working, watch out.
Yeah, somebody asking about Adrian Peterson. I was super busy today. Did Peterson get cut or something?
Yeah, I don't know why, but he was cut.
Man, the Tennessee Titans are a mess right now. I think the Titans are in trouble, like serious, serious trouble.
Serious trouble.
I think we could see the Colts catch them potentially, which is just wild to say right now. But we can definitely talk about that later. So the other X factor, I wanted to talk about Uchenna Nwosu because he's really been coming on the last couple weeks. Couple of quarterback hits against Kirk Cousins. He had a sack this past week. And it's a good matchup, right? Like you've got Garrett Bowles is on the COVID list. Bobby Massey potentially not playing. If Bobby Massey is playing, I don't know how good he's going to be because he's been kind of a mess for them. But so the backup left tackle that played against the Eagles is a player named Calvin Anderson. And against the Eagles, he allowed 4 pressures, 3 hits on Teddy Bridgewater. So it wasn't necessarily like a terrible day, but this could be a really good matchup for Uchenna Nwosu too. Really kind of gained some momentum. And, you know, we mentioned a few weeks ago, we saw ESPN's pass rush win rate graphic, and he was right there with Chase Young. And so the win rates for him have been pretty solid. You know, that's kind of consistent with his career. But unfortunately, the production had not, at least up until a couple weeks ago, really been there on a consistent basis. Now we've seen him have 2 really good games in a row against the Vikings and the Steelers. So this could be a good opportunity for him to make some noise. Obviously, they need the pass rush to hit home. It took them until late in the fourth quarter to really make an impact in that regard. So I think this could be a good game for Uchenna Nwosu as well.
I hope it is. They're going to need it. I'm glad he's turned it up the last couple of weeks, and he really has, thank goodness, because I wanted a right tackle really bad, but I was really concerned after that Patriots game. Again, it was looking very bleak. Joey Bosa by himself, double teamed, triple teamed over and over again. And Nwosu stepped up. Like, I know it wasn't exactly, the game plan against the Eagles. That's not like, and that's also a very tough, tackle duo to go against. But, since then he's really come in and held his own. So I'm all for a good game from him. He wants to get paid, right? So, you got to have a good game there. I'm curious what they'll do at the end of the season with him because let's say he has a nice solid trajectory to end the year, and he's averaging, 3-4 pressures a game, couple of run stops. What do you do? Because we talk about this guy that we really wanted what do you do if Hassan Reddick is on the market as well? Now, personally, I'd go get the guy who has probably 60 pressures right now.
Yeah.
But what does the team do with a guy who is solid but not spectacular and probably less expensive?
Yeah, Hassan Reddick is just he's fantastic. I think he has like 11 sacks right now. So,
yeah.
You know, he's not like he's not a crazy pressure guy, but he's just he gets after the quarterback. You know, I think he's only got he's got like 45, 50 pressures, if I'm not mistaken. So, but his sack total is really the one that you want. And so, you know, that's going to be really interesting. I think, you know, Brandon Staley was very profusive about his praise for Kyler Fackrell. Fackrell has made like 3 plays all season.
So, they're great plays.
They're great plays when he pops up, but it's once every 7 weeks. So, I can't imagine that both of those players are back. Nwosu would have to really like really come on for me to feel like, okay, the Chargers probably can't afford it. So it is going to be interesting. I think Nwosu at this point, even though he's come on the last couple weeks, I still think he's a 3, not a 2. So I think the Chargers do need a true running mate for Joey Bosa still, but I'm more inclined to keep Nwosu now as that third rotational rusher, as opposed to what I felt like previously.
Yeah, no, completely agree.
All right, let's move on to our bold prediction segment. Again, we've got some questions, and Pedro Ramirez asked a super chat question, so we will get to that. Just wanted to make that clear, but let's move on to our bold predictions. Tyler, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, kind of along the same lines of what we've been talking about. I think, you know, with the weaknesses along the offensive line and the way the pass rush finished last week, and maybe even the way the interior defensive line looked, not really a pass rushing group, but a solid group and a group that could penetrate. I will say that Teddy Bridgewater gets sacked 6 times this game. I think that's bold-ish, but also
super bold.
Fine, whatever. But okay, the only thing that throws a monkey wrench in that, other than the fact that it's 6 sacks, is that they might run it a lot. So if he has 18 attempts, I don't know if 6 sacks is possible, but you know, get him to throw it 25 to 30 times a game. Hey, you know, I think it's possible. I think Drew Tranquil is, you know, they're all like, these guys are kind of like, they were back last week, but they're kind of officially back this week. They're kind of had that game underneath their feet and whatever. So now it's time, you know, Drew Tranquil gets back to being a pass rusher. And Kaiser White throws in some work as a pass rusher. Now that Samuels Jr. is out, it's tough to blitz Tavon Campbell. They were trying to do that. I think you can get a couple of other things other than the defensive line, those edge rushers. But yeah, 6 sacks. It's bold. Whatever. It's bold predictions. None of us have been right so far, I'm pretty sure. But, you know.
Yeah, I think we've come close on a few things, but nothing like major. So that's going to be – I hope, you know, if they could get to 4 sacks, I'll be thrilled. So 6 sacks would be obviously amazing.
They'll get 4, no problem.
All right, so my bold prediction, I think a lot of people have rightfully – been a little frustrated with the lack of turnovers. Obviously the Chargers have won against the Vikings, but it's been a little dry in that regard the last few weeks. I think the Chargers have been close. You know, Tavon Campbell dropped an interception, so did Derwin James. Nasir Adderley dropped one against Mac Jones, or wait, was that Mac Jones or was that the Eagles game? I can't remember. Adderley should have had an interception in that stretch too. So it really has been since the Ravens game where we've seen multiple turnovers. And I think that changes this week against Teddy Bridgewater. I mentioned the offensive line struggles. You know, I mentioned a little bit of, you know, the running back committee. So I think the Chargers forced the Broncos to pass a lot in this game. And Teddy Bridgewater has 11 turnover worthy throws, which is not great. It's not really what we are used to seeing from Teddy Bridgewater. And so I think we see this Chargers defense get 3 turnovers this week. So I think we get a couple interceptions and we get 1 forced fumble. So I've said this for weeks that Nasir Adderley is really close to getting these turnovers. He had 1 against the Steelers, but Tavon Campbell, you know, got there early. But the secondary has had their opportunities the last few weeks, and I think we finally see them come down with them. So my bold prediction is 3 turnovers from the Chargers defense.
I think the only bold predictions we've really gotten right is either you or me or both of us in different weeks calling Asante Samuel Jr.'s interceptions or whatever it is.
I know you definitely got one. I had Asante's against the Cowboys. I had Asante for the Cowboys.
Yeah, oh, mine was the Niners preview, whatever the hell. That's a preseason game. It doesn't count. But yeah, no, that completely makes sense. I'm all for it. They are due. Like, this group is too talented to not have a turnover or two. And this team, you know, we've seen them punch, fight for these turnovers. We've seen Derwin James being a great spot for these turnovers. They just haven't been coming down with the football. But yeah, I could see that changing. So 6 sacks and 3 turnovers, a complete defensive dominance from the Chargers, who just got roasted by Roethlisberger, but they will dominate against the Broncos.
To be fair, you know, the Chargers defense did get hung out to dry in the fourth quarter.
They did.
The punt block, the interception, and the fourth down. So I thought the first half for the Chargers defense was really, really good. I thought the Chargers played pretty well in the third quarter. But, man, were they hung out to dry in the fourth quarter this week. So we will not talk about our league-wide picks today. Obviously, Alex is not here. So
darn, I wanted to pick for him.
Tyler just picks all the underdogs, and then, you know, we make up some ground. So we'll message each other. We'll get the picks together, and then we'll tweet them out before the games on Sunday or something like that. But let's get into our predictions for this game. I forgot to change the thing. Let me change that really quick. Live shows and all that. All right, here we go.
Was it to say Steelers?
It still said Steelers, yeah.
Okay, I predict they win, 41-37.
Okay. Yeah, 41-27. That reminds me, I've got to go find the gift card winner. Forgot to do that yesterday. All right, so Tyler, what do you think final score prediction for this game is?
I believe the last two times I said it would be a very close game, defensive struggle thing. One was the Browns, one was the Steelers. So I clearly don't know what I'm talking about, because those turn into shootouts. But this is a game that's definitely going to be close. If it's anything other than close, I'll kind of be surprised at this point. I trust the offense will do a good job. I think the defense, we obviously have confidence the defense can get some stops, get some turnovers, create some sacks. But it's going to be tough. And even with the 17-point lead or whatever it was against the Steelers, where all should have been good, it came down to the last couple minutes of the game. I don't think it'll be that much drama, but I do think it'll be close. So, like, I think the offense has put it together. I'm not going to go say like 40 points, obviously. And I'm not even going to say 30 points. To me, at this point, if you win in Denver, you know, on the road in Denver, especially after coming off the high of a really big win against the Steelers, it's all that matters to me. So 27-24 Chargers. It could come down to a field goal, and where better to kick it than Mile High?
Yeah, this is a great situation for Dustin Hopkins, special teams leading tackler from Sunday night. Mr. Dustin Hopkins. can't get over that, man. Literally no one else on the team registered a special teams tackle. It was just Dustin Hopkins. So that was fun. Envy Talent with a super chat is predicting a low scoring game as well. He said 17-14. So I don't think it's going to be that low scoring. I think it's going to be kind of close, but this is really a game where the Chargers should be able to do whatever they want on offense. I'm not particularly worried about anyone on defense outside of Draymond Jones and Justin Simmons, who's obviously given Herbert a couple of problems before. But really, the Broncos defense is just, it's not what it used to be. So I think that this is a good opportunity for this offense to continue to build on some momentum. And I think the Chargers put up a good amount of points. I'm not going to say 41, but I think they'll get close to or past 30. Okay. Just kind of depends how the defense is able to get off the field or not. So I'm going to say the Chargers put up 28 points. And I think because of a couple turnovers here or a couple sacks there, they'll be able to kind of hold down Teddy Bridgewater and the passing game to a good enough level. So I'll say 28-20 is my prediction.
Yeah, I like it. That's good. 28-20. I like that one. That's a pretty solid win. I don't know what the betting line is at this point, but I'll take that. That's a statement win on the road, winning by 8 in Denver. Even though they're shorthanded, Chargers sort of are. But no, I think that'd be a really good win for them. And, you know, the next couple of games, next time they play is the Bengals.
Yeah. So it's Broncos and then Bengals.
Yeah. They have to, obviously, but they have to win one of these two games. Like, I think those are two very big statement games. I'm hoping familiarity helps a little bit here. Just because sure. Now, that could go against them as well. But I do think some familiarity helps here. Justin Herbert almost broke the curse last year. His defense just didn't hold up. But I think we feel pretty confident about this defense.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Chargers are currently favored by 2.5. I think it opened at 1.5. So slight favorites. I think that sounds about right to me.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
All right. So I mentioned Pedro Ramirez's super chat question. Again, thank you guys for sending those. I want to make sure I get the question right. So let me scroll up and find it. But it was about Justin Herbert and... Oh, I scrolled too far. Shoot.
I got it on the screen.
Okay. Thank you. He says, is it crazy to say that Justin Herbert is playing like a top five QB? I think he's slowly back into the MVP race. Hello, Galadriel. After those three rough weeks. So, Tyler, what do you think about Herbert as a top five quarterback?
Okay. If we're assuming that, like, based on a few weeks and not just the last game, like last game, duh, he played like a top five quarterback. And I think that was honestly one of, if not his best performances as a quarterback. Yes, I know the defense he was playing was short-manned, but I really think they could have put up maybe not 41, but a significant number of points because he looked so good as a passer, decision-making, as a runner, all those things. Do I think he's playing like a top five quarterback? It's close, and a lot of the metrics will say that he is. Like, I think last week he was top five in that composite ranking of EPA per play, CPOE, and raw PFF grade. So sure, but we're not far removed from a Vikings game where I really didn't think he looked good. And it wasn't a lack of deep shots. Well, it was, but it was a lack of capitalizing on the opportunities that were there. Sort of a hesitancy going to the check down, that sort of thing. Not letting things open up, maybe being a little bit confused by the disguises. We're only one game away from that. And the two teams that he's really beaten up after the bye are the Steelers without most of their players and the Eagles, who have a very bad defense. Now, you beat up whoever's in front of you, so that, and he put up enough points to show that he beat those teams up. But can he do it against a defense like the Broncos, which I think is at least better than the Eagles and the Steelers based on what they had when they played them?
Sure.
Is he playing a top five quarterback? I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say yes after they win this week. I think one more game will put him definitively as like a top five quarterback if it's a good game, especially on the road at Mile High. I think he's close. But I don't think he's playing like one right now because of the Vikings game and the Patriots game. We're not very far removed from those games and where he didn't look good.
And you can throw the Ravens game in there too.
Yeah.
So it's been a little inconsistent over the last month. So I think he has the top five talent. What's helping Justin Herbert in this conversation is that Russell Wilson has been injured and bad. Josh Allen has been very inconsistent this year. Deshaun Watson, obviously not playing right now. So,
yeah,
I mean, who really is in the top five?
I think that's true, I guess, huh?
Obviously you have Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Kyler Murray, but he hasn't played in the last month either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Matthew
Stafford is an
argument. I would say Dak is close. So I think right now you've got a group of quarterbacks that are close. And I think Justin Herbert is in that tier of close quarterbacks to the top five, where if you argue that he's a top five quarterback, I will not blame you at all. I think
totally.
I have said after the Browns game that I thought that he was, and we saw a little bit of inconsistencies pop up. So I think he has top five talent. I think we've seen glimpses of that top five. Of course, I haven't even mentioned Patrick Holmes yet, which is kind of crazy. But outside of the turnovers, he's been generally fantastic. So I think there is a legitimate argument for him. I think if you're, you know, asking like general top fives, I think you still have to say Brady, Rodgers, Mahomes as the top three. And then really it's a bunch of everyone. Like if you argued to me that Dak Prescott was the fourth best quarterback in the league right now, I would understand that. Same thing with Justin Herbert. Same thing with Kyler Murray. So I think Justin Herbert is in the conversation. I would like to see him be a little bit more consistent in the next few games.
Yep, that's all I ask for. One more good game. I think you put himself back in that top five. They were very consistent, like against the that stretch they had earlier in this year. Probably the Cowboys game wasn't that great, but you had the Chiefs, you had the Raiders, and you had the Browns. Very good stretch of games for him. And that's when he entered the top five conversation. We all think he's a top 10 quarterback. There's no question about that. But
yeah,
one more game against the Broncos, and then definitely if they beat the Bengals, and it's because of him, yeah, top five.
Yeah. I think there really is, like, there's no one in the league that has really, like, established themselves as the clear-cut MVP right now. So everybody kind of had that as Kyler. Kyler's been injured. You know, they win two games with Colt McCoy. So I think that's kind of died down. Derrick Henry is injured now. Like, people are convincing themselves that Jonathan Taylor is the MVP at this point in the season. So, listen, if Justin Herbert really comes out here in the next month or so and continues to play like he did against the Steelers, then he's going to have a legitimate, you know, argument to be the MVP this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm not ready for top three. I think he's got a legitimate conversation for top five for sure.
Ooh, MVP though. Will Allen turn it around? It's so funny to read the description from, I think it was PFF Seth, about Josh Allen's situation. It's like, well, they used to do the, first of all, they started treating him like Brady initially, which is interesting because they did the same thing they did with Herbert, right? They showed Herbert's passing chart, Breeze passing chart. That was that article. Now they're talking about Josh Allen, and they showed Brady's passing chart and Allen's passing chart, which I thought was interesting. I guess that's the thing now. If you have a strong arm quarterback, show their passing chart like a weak arm quarterback. Not that Brady's a weak arm, but you know. But where was I going with that? Look, man, it was a great point, and I forget where I was going with that.
That's okay. I think I know where you're kind of going with the general idea, but I obviously I listen to the Athletic Football Show every single week. It's my favorite NFL podcast to listen to, and those guys do a great job of breaking down a lot of things. And you know, it's interesting looking back on things, right? Like, because we were all Brian Daboll guys, but
yeah,
that offense met this year. And the way that, you know, the Athletic Football Show guys were talking about it, it's, you know, the Brian Daboll has become just a vertical passing game madman, and he refuses to do anything else. And, you know, they have the receivers to do it, really? But teams are really playing the too high shell. They're giving them the Mahomes and Herbert treatment. They're really trying to shut that down. I'm not going to say dodge the bullet with Brian Daboll. I still think he's a fantastic offensive minded coach, and I still think he's, you know, generally a very positive leader, but it's just interesting because, like, we all kind of considered Daboll as this offensive genius last year. Now they're kind of all in on, like, this air raid vertical passing game, and it's not working. And the Bills are, you know, they are no longer in first place in the division. They have a brutal three-game stretch coming up with the Saints, Patriots, and Buccaneers. So it's just interesting, right? Like, the Chargers obviously hired Brandon Staley. They kind of surprised a lot of people. Brian Daboll was kind of considered the favorite. And, you know, Daboll is all in on the deep vertical passing game. People are criticizing Lombardi because he doesn't do it enough. So it's just a lot of interesting, you know, crossover there.
Yeah. It almost feels like if we talk about Brandon Staley, and we did when he was first hired, if we talk about him as an innovative, one step ahead coach, is this offense actually one step ahead? Like, it's not what we think it is, but to Staley and what he believes is going to be the future of this league, is this actually the next step? Now, you know, some of it's frustrating, like, stop throwing a fucking wide receiver screen. That is not the future of the league. But this idea that you take in this quarterback and letting him operate with his brain first and then let the arm talent shine because of his brain, you know, I'm actually curious because, like you said, Daboll was my coach candidate number one, and it made a ton of sense. You have Justin Herbert and you had Daboll, who turned around Josh Allen, and he was 50% of Josh Allen's success easily. The other 30% felt like Stephon Diggs. I mean, they really surrounded him with good talent. They made it work. But then, you know, like you said, they haven't changed. They haven't adjusted to the future of the league, which is, okay, you got a big arm, that's fine. We'll put two guys back there and good luck. And they're not adjusting. And then, you know, the Chargers had such a great plan with this. Like, yeah, the deep shots aren't there, but they're also protecting their quarterback. And it sounds like the Bills have not really invested in that front group to block for him. So the Chargers are, it seems like, and this might be far-fetched, but it seems like they're just ahead of the game. They're going, okay, I know you can do these deep shots, but let's be a quarterback for all the metrics, for all the analytics and all these great things. you know, drive down the field as you can, and we'll protect you with an offensive line. And the Bills had their quarterback, had their coordinator. Obviously, it's a good combination. We can't deny that. But they have not adjusted. They have not taken that next step forward, and the league might pass them by because obviously right now they're struggling. They put up 6 points against the Jaguars. Like, that's dreadfully disgusting. Yeah. And part of that was the offensive line, whereas the Chargers are going, listen, we're going to do this kind of offense to beat the, they're ahead of the game to counter the defenses they expected to be facing. And so they're ahead of the game right now, and they draft or sign an offensive lineman. I really think it's a smart plan. It's obviously working so far.
Yeah, it really is an interesting point because the Chargers' efficiency numbers are fantastic. I said them at the
incredible
part of the show. You know, you're third in DVOA, you're second in EPA per play, you're first in EPA per drive. And you know, one of the things that we all wanted to see from Justin Herbert in this offense this year was allow him to be more efficient, right? Because last year it was, you know, terrible on first down, terrible on second down. And you're asking Herbert to win on third and eight, third and nine, third and 10 on every single drive. And so, of course, you're going to have, you know, more deep plays, right? Because you're always in third and long.
That's it. So,
you know, this offense is so efficient right now. And, you know, this is the first year of the offense. So next year, right, like Herbert's going to be more comfortable. Presumably you get a franchise right tackle to go along with your franchise left tackle.
Yes.
Hopefully add a running back. Hopefully add some more speed, speed that actually can actually result in production, not just Jalen Guyton. So this offense right now, like it's not like a complete offense in terms of the roster, but the efficiency of this offense is really what's making it go. So I think that is an interesting point because so many people in the league are playing this too high shell, limiting deep shots. And the Chargers are just taking what the defenses are giving them and saying, okay, we're just going to kill you with Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler and Mike Williams and Donald Parham after the catch. And then next year, we'll add a running back, we'll add a deep threat, and we'll continue to protect our quarterback. So I do think that's a really interesting conversation to be had.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it wouldn't pass me. I wouldn't put it past Staley, who always talks about different sports and the books that he reads or whatever. I wouldn't put it past him to treat this offense almost like a Muhammad Ali, you know, rope-a-dope sort of boxing sort of offense where, you know, listen, you want to see the haymakers, you want to see, you know, Tyson versus Fury or whatever, just beating the crap out of each other. But it's more than that. You have to jab. You have to jab consistently. You can't just throw haymakers. You have to be precise and do whatever, whatever. I wouldn't put it past him to have that sort of same philosophy with his offenses. Let's learn the basics first. Let's jab, we'll jab, we'll jab. And then we'll work on the haymakers and we'll put together the best offense. And so, you know, kind of sucker them in with all sorts of things. Now you have these kind of killer shots. You have the kill shot that they work into it, right? With the RPO action, throw to Williams or Allen, whoever it is. Now they have the option to run. They're working in counter, like literally counters now. Wouldn't put it past him. He's a guy who would honestly take different components from different sports and incorporate that into his teaching philosophy and the way he coaches his team.
Man, that was a was not planning that kind of conversation, but that was a great one. So I think that's a good place to end it. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you, Tyler, for joining me today. You know, can't thank you guys enough for the support. We had a fantastic recap episode from the Steelers. So thank you so much for that. As always, please leave a rating or a review if you're listening to the audio version of this. If you're watching right now on YouTube, please like and subscribe to the channel. We really cannot continue to grow without you guys' support, so continue to do that. Tyler, thanks again for joining me. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving with you and your family, and I will see you guys next week.